98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Friday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Ochsin Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo.
Oh, Burnsy, what is going on?
You know, I feel bad for teammate Sarah, who was not with us yesterday for our big pizza party and instead had to live vicariously through our Twitter account, which is no way to live.
No.
Really.
I mean,
there was nothing we could do.
No, there wasn't.
I mean, we were trying to live in the moment and celebrate the Dodgers.
The demise of the Dodgers.
Yeah.
It was just fun.
I feel bad that you weren't
Picked up some pies. Burnsy got some cupcakes.
Yeah.
Blew it out. Mm. The photos looked really fun.
Man, you really sound hurt.
Despondent.
We've hurt her feelings.
Pin the tail on a donkey was great. I mean, that was a great game. It was like, it was a picture of AJ Pollock, but it was pin the tail on Benedict AJ is what we called the game. It was fun.
Wow.
I actually won it.
You did.
Pin the tail on Benedict AJ. Boom. Got him.
Gambo, are you wearing Dodger blue today, by the way?
No, it's more of a navy shade.
Okay.
Yeah, it's more of a...
I don't know how Burnsy got a pinata that looked like Clayton Kershaw. I don't know how he did it. But he did. We beat the hell out of that thing, man. Like the Nationals did.
And you know what?
We beat the hell out of it.
Jordan Bird was the one whose swing finally broke Kershaw open. And you know what came out when that pinata broke? Home runs. All over the floor. I mean, the pinata broke, and it just home runs. Soto and Rendon, it's just home runs just falling all over the floor when we broke open that pinata.
I don't even like the Dodgers, and my feelings are hurt for them.
Yeah, I know. Sarah, in monitoring our Twitter account, noted that 90% of our audience really enjoyed our little pizza party yesterday, and that the other 10% thought we were juvenile second graders.
Which is probably right.
I can't really argue with that.
That's kind of the standard breakdown for our Twitter following anyway.
Pretty much. Yeah, 90% like what you do and 10% think you're a joke. That sounds about right when it comes to the social media account. Let's weigh in on our biggest story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in, brought to you by 3010 Weight Loss for Life.
Well, we talked about it yesterday. The potential that this game has on Sunday as being the... I don't think Kyler Murray needs a breakout game, because Kyler Murray's put out breakout-type numbers so far this year through five games. I mean, he's on pace to legitimately challenge Andrew Luck's rookie passing yardage record set a few years ago. There's nobody in the NFL who's got more than 1,300 yards passing and more than 200 yards rushing. He's broken out. But against this Atlanta Falcons defense, which has given up the second most points of any team in the National Football
League. You're
expecting
that breakout game, aren't you?
Well,
From
a point standpoint, and that's probably what's going to have to happen if the Cardinals are going to have a chance to win this game. They're going to have to score a lot of points, and this might be the week for Kyler Murray to do it, and certainly he's earning a lot of respect from the opposition going into
this
game.
Well, there's no question. Opposition and internationally. I mean, you know, you're watching. Deion Jones from the Falcons said, I don't think there's anyone like him. Like, I just don't think there's anyone like him. He's a very unique player.
I don't think there's any like him.
Why?
He's fast. He's a little shorter, but, you know, he moves around a lot. And he got a lot of movement plays where he's a guy with the ball. And, you know, just something you got to account for.
And, again, the Russell Wilson talk came up again.
I think he moves a little bit more than Russ. Yeah, but I can see that. I see what you're saying. Like, I see that style, but right now he's moving a lot more than Russ.
Atlanta's linebackers coach called Kyler Murray a pain in the butt.
Ultimately, you have this quarterback that is a serious pain in the butt. You know, he's as athletic as I've ever seen at the quarterback position, and he can throw the ball, so it's a great challenge.
There's no coach out there that's saying anything negative about the quarterback they're playing. It just doesn't happen. So, you know, do you take it with a grain of salt, or do you believe these guys? He's a pain in the butt. I mean, he's got one win. Five games in, he's got one win.
He's
on pace to have 13 touchdown passes this year. That's what he's on pace for.
That's a good question. I think 90% of that comment is meant to not provide any bulletin board material and to be complimentary.
Satisfy the status quo.
But I do also think that there is some... Kyler Murray is a pain in the butt.
He can be,
He's... Oh, let me put it this way. His skill set is a pain in the butt. what he now, whether he's going to do it on a football field for 3 hours, we'll see. But his, to borrow a line from Taken, his particular set of skills, right, that Kyler Murray brings to the table is a pain in the butt because he can fly, because he can throw the ball on a dime.
Yeah, he can leap tall buildings with a single bound. I get it. The kid's unique.
He's got a unique set of skills that is, if they're all working and all in perfect synchronicity, it's a pain in the butt.
SB Nation did a story today, early returns on Kyler Murray, and they were very positive about it. He can beat you with his arms or his legs. He's got great numbers. You mentioned 1,324 passing yards. He's actually on pace for 4,237 yards passing.
Which I think we put him just shy of Luck's rookie record. Just shy.
But he's also on pace for 13 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So he hasn't had the touchdown passes. But he's got 6 total touchdowns. He's got a great completion percentage. 62% for a rookie. That's fantastic. 206 yards rushing. But they do say there hasn't been the jaw-dropping performance yet. So, the yards have been there. Some of the runs have been there. But I think what they're looking for is, can he throw three touchdown passes in a game? I think that's what they're, because if you go look at the game log.
Is that what we need to have our jaws drop when it comes to Kyler?
Man, I don't know. That's because he's thrown for 349 yards, 308 yards. He's thrown 2 touchdowns in a game against Carolina. He had 93 yards rushing against Cincinnati with a touchdown. But I think that the lack of having the big touchdown passes, I think that's what they're saying. There's no jaw-dropping performance. They want to see a quarterback throw a touchdown pass. That's my feeling by reading the SB Nation article.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what Kyler Murray would have to do. And this is a good question. I hadn't really thought of it this way. What does Kyler Murray have to do for it to be considered a quote-unquote jaw-dropping performance? I mean, it probably, and I think this is obvious, but I'm going to say it anyway, it's got to start with a Cardinals victory, right?
Sure.
You can't, no one's jaw is going to drop if you throw for, I mean, unless you throw
for
402 yards and 4 touchdowns and the Cardinals lose, okay, that might drop some people's jaws, but I don't know if it's going to be truly the moment that we're looking for out of Kyler Murray unless they win that football game. What does that performance,
what is a jaw-dropping performance?
What does it truly look like for Kyler Murray? It involves a win, it involves what, north of 300
yards passing. He had 300 yards passing and 2 touchdowns against the Lions.
That's what I mean.
I don't know what they're expecting here, but he only had 13 rushing yards in that game. I think they're looking for a combination of the Detroit game with the Cincinnati game rushing wise.
Okay,
I think
so, in other words, the only way people's jaws are truly going to drop about Kyler Murray is a win. B, 300 plus yards. C,
three touchdowns.
And D, at least 75 rushing yards. That's a pretty big grocery list for Kyler Murray.
You know, he had a really good performance last week. That's a pretty high standard for Kyler Murray. He did have a really good performance last week, but he, okay, since the Detroit game, completion percentage, 62.5, 69.8, 68.8, 62.5. He's been at 62.5 or more completion percentage in all 4 games since the Lions game. It's pretty good.
Oh, it is.
It's pretty good.
And I'm not going after, I'm really asking the question honestly.
I think people want to see 3 touchdown passes from a quarterback.
What do you want to see? Do you think we've seen it already? Or what? What does John Gambadoro need to see to go, wow, that's it. Wow, wow. Sorry, that was my best Gambo impersonation. Wow,
300 yards and 3 total touchdowns.
Give it to me again.
300 yards passing and 3 total touchdowns. So it could be 2 passing, 1 rushing.
Okay.
Because let me see if he's done that before. He has not done that before. He has not had 3 total touchdowns in any game. He had 2 total touchdowns against the Lions. He had no touchdowns against the Ravens. He had 2 touchdowns against Carolina. He had 1 touchdown against Seattle and 1 touchdown against Cincinnati. 300 yards passing and 3 total touchdowns, however the touchdowns come.
Do they have to win? Does it have to come in a victory?
That's a good question. I don't... I mean, if he does that and somebody kicks a field goal at the end of the game, do we still not say it's a great performance? I mean, if he leads them to 31 points against Atlanta, and Atlanta kicks a field goal with time expires to win the game, 34-31, do we not count that as a great performance?
Yeah, and I guess the reason why
I would say no. You don't need to win.
And I guess the reason why I'm kind of probing on this topic a little bit is just because I want to make sure that the standard is not being unfairly set for Kyler Murray. You know, I want to make sure that our expectations are realistic for Kyler Murray when it comes to what is a breakout performance, what's a breakthrough performance, what, because I don't want it. He still is at the end of the day a rookie quarterback, right? And one thing that I read that SB Nation article too, and one thing they point out that I think is abundantly clear, you can see him getting better week to week. I mean, it's patently obvious to anybody watching that the Kyler Murray we're watching now going into week six is better than the Kyler Murray we saw going into week two or going into week three.
And that's,
he's getting better.
And they say that. They say that. He much improved over the four. You know what stands out? Nobody's pointed this out. You know, he hasn't fumbled the ball yet. Five games hasn't had one fumble. No strip sacks, no fumbles, no, all the times that he's run, sliding. He's never lost the ball when he's sliding. He's never been hit and had the ball popped out. All of those sacks, not one of them has been a strip sack. Not one of them he's about to throw the ball and the guy hits it. Not one fumble for Kyler Murray. Not one.
Yeah. Arizona Sports wants you to blitz the Bayou, an all expenses paid trip for two to New Orleans. Watch some football, eat some gumbo, go along with the Bird Gang Travel Club. You're going to love this trip.
I've never been there.
Neither have I.
New Orleans.
Neither have I. Nolens. Text the word Blitz, BLITZ, to 620-620 for your chance to win. That's Blitz. Text it to 620-620.
Could you eat a bucket of crawfish?
Could I?
Could you?
Sure.
Would you?
All right. Yeah, could I? Would I?
Would you, Jordan?
I would in a...
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. New Orleans is my kind of town. Crawfish? I've been there many times.
Oh, have you been there many times? Really?
Yeah, I've been there to watch the Cardinals play the Saints before, as one of the times I've been there.
Wow, yeah.
I'm Italian. Anything that crawls, that's a fish, we eat it. If it crawls, octopus,
anything
snails.
That crawls.
Anything that crawls on the ocean floor, we eat.
Oh, okay.
What?
No. I was thinking crawling and eating, but when you said on the ocean floor, I'm like, okay, yeah. So
yeah, I love octopus.
Crabs, lobster,
octopus, snails.
But if it doesn't crawl, you're not interested?
No, I mean, I eat that stuff too, but we like the stuff that crawls.
So basically, you like seafood is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay.
See, when we were very smart, it was a lot easier to catch the stuff that was crawling on the bottom.
Just
clams.
Trying to simplify what
they
you
don't
like.
Crawl.
You like seafood. Yeah, you like seafood.
Oh, I love seafood.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
There you go. It has been one of the biggest questions of the week heading into Sunday's Cardinals-Falcons game. We have new clues as to whether David Johnson is going to suit it up on Sunday. We'll reveal the clues next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, so here's your Cardinals injury report. It's brought to you by The Joint Chiropractic. Improve your quality of life with routine, affordable chiropractic care. Find one of over 30 locations by visiting thejoint.com today. It just came out. Here are your players who are out for Sunday's game against the Atlanta Falcons. Dennis Gardeck, the linebacker, is out. Ezekiel Turner, the linebacker, is out. Charles Washington is out. Zach Allen, Demir Byrd, David Johnson, Christian Kirk, Andy Lee, Hassan Reddick, Terrell Suggs, and the newly acquired Trevor Williams, all listed as questionable. But when it comes to one David Johnson, he spoke with the media today, and just based off the fact that he was made available to the media today, that he spoke to reporters, and with the words that he said, lead us to believe that he's going to play on Sunday. Here's David Johnson saying he was fully able to practice.
Yeah, I was able to do everything, participate in practice, and did a good job.
Telling everybody what was wrong with his back?
It was just tight. Just felt tight, but now it's gone. I'm good to go.
Now it's gone, good to go. What can you do to make sure you play on Sunday?
Treatment and continue to move around. And, when game time comes around, be as fully good as I can be.
I was hinting yesterday that I was getting that David Johnson and Tremaine Brock should be good, that there's nothing to worry about with Jordan Hicks. He'll be out there on Sunday. So, big. That's big. David Johnson playing is big. Without David Johnson, I think any chances of a win, they kind of go out the window. I mean, it's very difficult to take him off the field. I mean, we've had mixed emotions about David Johnson because of his lack of success in some of these games running the football, but there's no denying that they have found a use for him. A lot of it's in the passing game, some in the running game, and now with the 1-2 bunch of him and Chase Edmonds, you know, he's got to be out there. Like, they need David Johnson to win football games.
It is funny.
It's been mixed emotions. You know what?
It's almost full circle on David Johnson.
No question.
Now, right? We started the season talking about, boy, he's just an essential part. Here he goes. He's going to get back to where he was a few years ago, 2016. First couple of weeks at the minimum left us all wanting more. And here we are. We've swung back around full circle where it feels like, okay, we might not be completely satisfied with everything. I've heard Bickley talk about this, that he feels like David Johnson has left yards out on the field. And maybe that's the case. I would much rather have him than not, based off of what he's able to do in this offense. Has he left something out there on the field?
That was a BA thing more than anything, wasn't it? BA left yards on the field.
Oh, yeah.
That was more of a BA thing.
Every Monday, BA used to say that about David Johnson. Oh, yeah, he could have had 50 more yards. He could have had 100 more yards. Maybe he could have done. Yeah, of course, that was total. But others, not just Bickley, others feel the same way, where they watch him play and it just leaves them wanting a little bit more, because they feel like he could give a little bit more. And yet, the results that happened last week against Cincinnati,
right?
But I wouldn't want to be without that if I were the Cardinals.
Listen, again, the one staggering number that sticks out like a sore thumb that is just not comparable to 2016 is the rushing touchdowns.
No doubt.
He's got one, I think. He had 16 that year. He basically got one a game, every game in 2016. It sticks out like a sore thumb. But I think there's a part of you get done with a David Johnson game, you're like, that was okay. And then you look at the numbers, like, oh, it's actually better than I thought. It's like, that's what it is.
How
do you think David Johnson did today? He was okay. But then you look at the numbers, you're like, oh, he had 150 yards all purpose? Oh, okay. That's better than I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
Because the touchdowns aren't there. The touchdowns. Now, if the red zone thing works itself out and they start hitting at 60% instead of 30%, I'm sure he's going to be a big part of the reason why the red zone is having success, and then you'll see the more touchdowns.
Yeah, this morning on the Doug and Wolf Show, Steve Keim, his weekly visit, 7:45, typically every Friday morning, Steve Keim goes on the Doug and Wolf Show. And speaking of topics that we've talked a lot about so far this year, Andy Isabella. And Steve Keim's comments about Andy Isabella suggest that there might be something more going on than just a guy who's been moved around inside and outside and hasn't really found a home just yet.
Well, I mean, personally, I think, some of it's on him in terms of becoming a better route runner, becoming more consistent catching the football, but at the same time, you know, opportunity and, being from a small school, he's continuing to grow. I think the stat I saw that I forgot about was, I don't think Larry Fitzgerald caught a touchdown until October, and, being the third pick overall, you would hope that's a little bit earlier, but he's had a pretty good career, and I'm not comparing those two by any means, but, you know, Andy has done some good things that I've seen, not only on tape, but in practice.
Interesting that it, at the beginning there, I'm going to play that very, very part at the beginning again. What is holding Andy Isabella back?
Well, I mean, personally, I think, some of it's on him in terms of becoming a better route runner, becoming more consistent catching the football.
Now, I hear that, and I hear a guy who... I don't want to say struggling, but I guess I probably could if I wanted to. Struggling to pick up some of the finer points of being a wide receiver in the National Football League.
It's exactly
route running, his hands.
Route running like and that. Hands. But he's working really hard, right? The route running and hands. He has a kid that had 102 catches last year for 1,698 yards, and he runs faster than almost anybody in the NFL, right? You put those all together. It's like, hey, how do you catch 102 passes? And you, like, okay, so you must be able to catch. Yeah, it's 1,698 yards. I mean, I know it's UMass, but he still caught all those passes. He still ran for all those yards. The talent's there, but they just got to define it a little bit better, right? I mean, everything's precision in the National Football League. You can get away with it a little more in college, not running a precise route. But in the NFL, everything's got to be precision, right? Everybody's so fast. The defensive backs are so fast. The linebackers are so good. Like, everything's got to be precision. So you got to be a really good route runner, which Keyshawn Johnson is, but we know Isabella's working to get better at that.
Steve was also asked about Isabella being a system pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the evaluation process, and I can't talk about DK, but there's a number of things that goes into making the selection, and that's all the information you have on players' backgrounds when it comes to medical, when it comes to off-field work ethic, when it comes to the ability to run multiple routes in the route tree. I mean, there's so many things that go into it. Production throughout their careers, and when you watched Andy Isabella coming out, he played at a high level against big teams, you know, Georgia and other Division I-A teams in the SEC. So, you know, we're comfortable with him. And again, we just got to get him more involved. And I think over the next several weeks, you'll see a little more of him.
And just to kind of frame up that answer a little bit, the question was sort of framed up in the sense of, hey, DK Metcalf has worked out for Seattle and he was picked after Andy Isabella. Yep. Why hasn't Andy Isabella worked out? We were talking about this a couple days ago.
They didn't like DK Metcalf in the draft. The Cardinals weren't going to draft him.
Yeah,
they did not like him in the draft.
But at this point, it's just sort of a question of production. DK Metcalf is producing, Andy Isabella
is because
not.
He's playing, and Isabella's not. I mean, that's why. I mean, can't produce if you don't play, right?
I looked up some numbers on rookie wide receivers when we were having this conversation a couple of days ago, how difficult it is for rookie wide receivers to impact games in the National Football League. It was hard to do the research. Here's basically what I found. Since the year 2000, so we're talking about nearly 20 years of NFL football, okay? A rookie wide receiver has crossed the 1,000-yard mark.
Whew.
8 times.
Oh, I was going to say 7.
Sorry, I didn't realize you were thinking about guessing. I didn't realize you were trying to guess.
So in 20 years, there's only been 8 rookie wide receivers that have gone over 1,000 yards.
Not that we expected that of Andy Isabella, but you know that's kind of the threshold for greatness,
greatness. Yeah, 1,000 yards
that's
is greatness.
Greatness,
yeah.
Right out of the chutes, you're great. 8 times. 20 years. Every other year, basically. And the article points out the stats are kind of thrown off a little bit because in 2014, you had 3 in the same year. Okay.
So who are they? Does it say?
Kelvin Benjamin.
Oh, okay.
Mike Evans and OBJ.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Same year, 3 guys, 1,000 yards. Take those 3 out, the number goes down to 5. 5 in nearly 18 years of football. It's hard.
Julio Jones didn't even. He was close. Julio Jones was close.
Fitz had like 750 yards, but Steve's right. He didn't get his first touchdown.
But I don't think we're expecting.
Until well into his rookie year.
I'm not expecting Isabella. I'm expecting him to be a guy that contributes. And whether I'm not expecting 1,000 yards from him.
Neither am I.
But I'm also expecting. Like, he hasn't even targeted yet.
No.
You're 5 games in, the guy hasn't even got a target.
Which makes me think they're just not ready to trust him yet. I mean, if I'm just being blunt about it, the zero targets thing makes me think that he has not done enough in practice to warrant the trust that comes with the targets. Simple as that.
I keep hearing he's working extremely hard to get it, and maybe this is the week he finally gets targeted.
Maybe. Gerrit Cole, he's not just dominating the baseball postseason this year. This performance that we've seen out of him has been historic on levels that will be familiar to us here in Arizona. That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter poll presented by Sanderson Ford.
Sarah Cazell has put together today's Twitter poll question of the day. In addition,
it's a good one.
Monitoring.
It's a good one. I like this one.
Well, let our audience in behind the curtain for just a second. Here's top 1 reasons how you know Gambo suggested today's Twitter poll. Before it even gets introduced, Gambo tells you how great it is.
Yeah.
Here endeth the lesson.
It's kind of obvious, huh?
That's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's good. This is good. This one is really good. Yeah, it's really good.
I got to be a little less.
Talk
gotta be
about
more, subtle.
I got to
be more subtle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gambo, you, I've known you for many, many, many years now. You are about as subtle as a sledgehammer. You really are. Yeah. Subtle. I don't do
subtle.
Nuance. Yeah. Subtle. No.
Yeah.
No.
No, they're not getting D'Angelo Russell. Stop asking me. There's not even a snowball's chance in hell. Maybe a little chance? No, there's no chance.
I'm honestly surprised we even started playing the Twitter poll music before you started telling everybody how great this Twitter poll question was. Gee, I wonder if this one came from Gambo today.
It's kind of an easy one for today. This just made sense.
Gambo.
It's just common sense.
Gambo's,
I have a little common sense.
I appreciate Gambo being a good sport when I give him a hard time. I really do. I appreciate that. I appreciate you being a good sport about it. Sarah, what's Gambo's brilliant poll question today?
Per John Gambadoro, 4 teams remain in the Major League Baseball postseason. So it's a pretty simple one. Like you said, Gambo, who wins it all? 4 teams to pick from. If you're picking from the NL, it'll be the
Nationals. And it's not the Dodgers!
Or the Cardinals, that's right.
No. Can't pick the Dodgers!
If you want to pick an AL team, you've got the Yankees or the Astros. So which team wins it?
Honestly, I hate to say this. I really do. I got a little voice inside my head, and it's telling me the New York Yankees
are going to win
the World Series. I know. It's just this little voice going, it's going to be the Yankees. It's going to be the Yankees because the Astros rotation is all screwed up
now. I
want
to face Cole in a Game 7.
Yeah, I'm going to say.
In Houston.
Me, the guy who hates the Yankees, I'm going to say the Yankees. I think they're going to win the World Series.
All right, let's go Yankees.
Gambo, your pick. Do you
more heart than head.
Okay.
I don't know how they're going to beat Verlander, Cole, and even Greinke. Greinke's still a great pitcher.
Yeah.
We don't have great pitching. We have a great bullpen and great bats. Yeah, I'll say the yeah. I'll go with the. I got to go with my team. I have to.
Okay. 61%.
Say the Astros.
Say the Astros. Yeah,
makes sense.
61. 18% have the Yankees. 13% go for the St. Louis Cardinals. Only 9% think the Nationals will win.
All right. That's a good poll question. Gambo.
Yeah,
solid.
Yeah, great work, Gambo.
Will the Dodgers win a World Series in this century? Yes or no?
That'd be another good one, too. In the meantime.
Another 1-2 pitch. Kiermaier strikes out swinging. On the curveball, there's number 10 for Gerrit Cole. Two down in the eighth inning.
He held them.
This is ridiculous.
Eight innings, two hits, one run, solo home run. He struck out 10. I think my favorite stat about Gerrit Cole in winning American League Divisional Series Game 5 last night and eliminating the Rays, move on. Gerrit Cole has not lost a game since May 22nd. That is a streak of 24 straight starts without a loss. He is, since May 22nd, 18-0, 1.66 ERA, 251 strikeouts.
That's impossible.
And that can't be
possible. Like that doesn't sound like it's possible. The guy is 18-0 since May 22nd. Like that doesn't seem like that's real. Like that doesn't seem real, does it?
No, it does not.
How do you do that? How do you not lose a game since May 22nd? I mean, we're almost in May, but we're closer to May than we're further away from it, aren't we? June, July, August, September, October.
No.
It's close. All right. Well, we're close to the halfway part. I mean, close.
We're close.
Not quite, but close. Yeah,
we're
not
close.
Quite, but
close.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it just seems ridiculous. You haven't lost a game in over 5 months.
Yeah.
That's unheard of. I mean, now listen to this. According to Stats LLC, to find the last pitcher who won that many games in a row within a single season, you have to go back 107 years. Back to 1912, Rube Marquard spun off 19 in a row for John McGraw's New York Giants.
He was such a Rube.
He was fantastic. You remember watching that? 1912. Literally the last time somebody has done this is insanity. It doesn't even, again, it doesn't seem real.
No.
1912, the last time a pitcher has done this.
And some of these stats that you emailed here, 52 swings and misses in one series, right? 52 swings and misses in back-to-back games, striking out 46% of the hitters that he's faced in a postseason series. I mean, these are things that you're Kurt Schilling didn't do this. Randy Johnson didn't have a postseason run quite like this. Bumgarner, Halliday, Beckett, Jack Morris. I mean, some of the legends that we kind of grew up on, that we're accustomed to seeing. Some of these numbers.
Beckett's name in forever.
I know, right? But oh, he used to be so good.
He was.
Gerrit Cole, in some regards, is doing things that is historic, positively historic.
Yeah.
And he put it on display yesterday.
Two ALDS starts, 54 batters faced, 25 strikeouts, 6 hits, 1 run. 54 batters faced, 52 swings and misses. They hit 118 against him, 118. He now has, over the course of the whole season, including playoffs, 351 strikeouts in 228 innings.
Yeah.
This guy is a machine. He's an absolute machine. And they didn't get him out of the game. They finally took him out after 8 innings last night, went to the bullpen because they tacked on those 2 more runs in the bottom of the 8th and had the game won. They took him out. But he has just been, my God, how much money is he going to make? I mean, 300 million?
Well, you said yesterday 200.
That's got to be wrong. I mean, I sound like an idiot now. He's going to get more than that, isn't he?
He's, what, 29 years old? Right, I think he just turned 29, or he's about to turn 29, or he's late 20s, early 30s, somewhere around there.
He is 29 years old.
Okay.
Just turned 29.
Just turned 29. So
you'll have him for age 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, 34, 35 if you give him a 7-year deal.
I think he'll get more than Greinke's 206.
Oh, yes.
I think he'll definitely get more than Greinke's 206. I can't wait to see who gives it to him. I really can't. Who gives it to him? Do the Angels give it to him?
I'm going to go Yankees.
I think the Yankees give it to him?
I think they're ready to spend on a pitcher. They haven't done it.
Dodgers could do the same thing if they wanted to. Dodgers really, we talked about this yesterday. They typically don't shop in that part of the store. They could. I don't think it's going to be the Red Sox. They've talked about slashing their payroll, trying to get back down a little bit.
It's not going to be them.
Yeah. On the other side of the equation, there was Tyler Glasnow, the starter for the Rays, and he said what was patently obvious in the aftermath of that Game 5 last night, that he was tipping his pitches.
I went back and looked, and it was pretty obvious as far as the tips go, but again, like, I'm not going to say that's the reason why. Like, I left some pitches that were there to hit, like, over the middle of the plate, and they're really good hitters, and they can do things with, I don't care how hard you throw. They're good hitters, so I don't know if that's what it was, but when I look back, it was pretty obvious.
Kevin Cash, the manager.
We are aware at times with some pitchers, but at the end of the day, it's 98 and breaking ball. You know, you still got to do your job with it, and they certainly did.
After the game, I always go to the MLB Network show because they do a really good job, and I watched them, and they literally said, listen, here's why, and they showed it. Here's the video, here's the curveball, here's the fastball, here's where his gloves here, gloves tied.
Yeah.
And then they also showed all the Astros players, like, whispering to each other. Like, when they, hey, you come back, see Bregman come back from a bat, he's doing this, he's doing, like, they were letting everybody know. And you could see, when Altuve got to first base, he was like whispering, he was yelling at the dugout, he covered his mouth, and he was like whispering, telling. So they knew, like, they were on to Glasnow in that first inning. They were on to what he was, they could tell the difference between the curveball and the fastball.
Yeah.
And it made all the difference in the world in that first inning.
And that first inning, that was basically the ball game. They jumped on him, they scored four runs, yep. and after that, he was fine, because I'm sure he self-corrected, but by then it didn't matter. They had their four runs. They had given Gerrit Cole the four-run lead. So game one of the ALCS is tomorrow. Game one of the NLCS is tonight between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Washington Nationals. Wow. We'll join that game in progress here on our station right after
our
show.
Who are you rooting for?
Oh, I'm rooting for Goldie. I mean, I've been very, as Jack Nicholson would say in A Few Good Men, I've been crystal clear about that.
Okay, I'm going to root for the Nationals.
You just don't want to root for Goldie, do you?
You just
don't want to do it.
I love Huddy. I want Daniel Hudson and Chappelle to win more than I want Goldie.
Hey, look,
it's a win-win. And I feel
I want Huddy to win.
Because, I mean, if you support the Nationals, there's plenty of Diamondbacks
there's
on
more.
That roster.
There's far more. I
talked to Huddy right after the game the other night when they won. He was coming back here. His wife was having a baby yesterday, and he had to go back out to the game. Huddy's such a great guy. I want to see him win.
That's fine. I have no problem
with that.
So
it's not because I'm not rooting against Goldie. I just would rather. I'm going to root for Huddy.
I was just trying to piss you off.
I know.
Join Kevin McCabe and AZ Preps live tomorrow morning from 9 to 11. There'll be a Chick-fil-A off of Peoria Avenue in Metro Center Mall. You're going to have the chance to win free Chick-fil-A for a year, tickets, and other prizes. So visit the events page at arizonasports.com and go say hi to our friend K-Mac, the dean of Arizona High School Football. It's the Chick-fil-A High School Football Roadshow Series tomorrow. ASU football going to go into tomorrow's game with a top 20 ranking. They're going to be facing a team that, in the eyes of some, could be facing their breaking point. We'll explain why coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Pac-12 preview with Burns and Gambo. Brought to you by Dos Equis. Keep it interesante.
All right, so here's your slate of games this weekend in the Pac-12. It starts tonight. 13th-ranked Oregon is hosting Colorado on FS1 this evening. And then your conference games and non-conference games this weekend include USC taking on 9th-ranked Notre Dame this weekend. Big game for Notre Dame, 4-1 on the season. 15th-ranked Utah visiting Oregon State. Of course, they coming off the big win last weekend against UCLA. And Washington.
That should be a good game.
Arizona. That should be a real good game. Yeah. 4-2 Huskies versus the 4-1 and undefeated so far in the continental United States.
Tell them.
Are you heading down? I assume you're doing your thing for that? Yeah. Okay. There you go.
Let's go.
That is your Pac-12 schedule. And of course, ASU is taking on Washington State in a game which will feature Washington State's high profile, high powered offense versus an ASU defense that is one of the best in the country when it comes to giving up points per game. Mike Leach on Wednesday, the head coach of Wazoo, was asked if ASU's defense reminds him of Utah, given what Utah just did to Washington State last weekend.
I don't know. I mean, I could make something up, but not really. They're a little different than that. You know, they feel good about their defensive line. They do play off you, but then in certain situations, they're very aggressive. They play man. They blitz more than Utah does.
Yeah, I could say something nice, but
he's honest.
I don't feel like saying anything nice. Yeah. No, not really.
If Leach was a head coach in the NFL, you'd love those press conferences.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, that thing he did a couple weeks ago where he had the mascots, he rated them at, like, if he literally did that off the top of his head, that's fantastic.
I'm telling you, it's borderline genius. He was able to do that off the top of his head,
yeah.
Yes.
What scares me about this game for ASU is just simply the amount. They've given up 19 plays of 20 yards or more. That's 90th in the country. Okay, and there's a guy that knows a thing or two about big plays. He's the coach of Washington State. They kind of specialize in big plays.
Yeah.
So that's the... I mean, you want to have a bend but break defense. They've had a lot of bend but don't break with ASU. This could break because they have the ability to make those big plays down the field, and ASU's given up 20 of them. Yeah. 19 plays of 20 yards or more.
Somebody made the comment that this is the greatest offensive challenge ASU will see all season long.
Totally agree.
And it's hard not to see how it is. And Washington State leads the FBS in passing yards per game, 450 per. They're sixth in scoring in the FBS at 44.8 points per game. They did run into a problem against Utah. Their senior quarterback, Anthony Gordon, two picks, only 252 yards. He's thrown four interceptions in his last couple of games. He ran into a little bit of a problem there. And, of course, ASU's defense is what it is, one of the best in the country when it comes to at least keeping other teams out of the end zone and off the scoreboard.
You follow the Utah game plan.
Yeah.
You follow the Utah game plan. Holding them to 13 points, I mean, you try to follow that because they were able to shut that Washington State offense down. But they're not going to get shut down a whole lot through the course of a season.
What I think is almost as important. Okay, that's obviously the bright, shiny object, right? Wazoo's offense against ASU's defense. But what needs to be talked about, Wazoo's defense sucks. I mean, they're one of the worst in the country.
Defensive coordinator quit.
They
made massive changes, yep. You know, in the starting lineup and backups, and they just changed a whole lot of things around. Just trying to get, you know, they... trying to get something going because they've really struggled defensively.
Yeah, I mean, they're 90th or worst in just about every category, yep, on defense. Yards per game, rushing yards, passing yards per game, points per game. Their defensive coordinator quit. And this is a team that, and I read this on ASUDevils.com today. It's their suggestion, not mine, but I thought about it for a little bit. In Washington State, they lost their first two conference games right out of the chute. They gave up 67 to UCLA. They lost to Utah. Their defensive coordinator quit. Their head coach is calling the players fat, dumb, and entitled. This could be, for a program that's had an awful lot of success the last half decade in this conference, they've gone to good bowl games. They've won a lot of games under Mike Leach the last 5 years or so. This might be a little bit of a breaking point for them. What is the temperature of that program right now, given that they're 0-2 to start the conference, given the success they've had, given the names that Mike Leach has been calling the players? And look, I have no problem. I'm going to make sure I'm clear about this. I don't have a problem with a head coach saying bad things about his players. I kind of have a problem when he does it at a press conference out in public like that. Fat, dumb, and entitled, and he says that to everybody. I mean, if you think a guy's fat, dumb, and entitled as his head coach, tell him to his face, not to the media. That's kind of a
sure,
low-rent thing.
Sure, but that's who he is. He doesn't hold stuff back from the media.
I just do wonder if that's got that team, if all of this has that team on the edge a little bit.
Okay.
Right?
You said the temperature. How about the temperature here? This is an afternoon game. It's going to be 90 degrees.
Oh, I like how you did
this.
That.
Pullman in, yeah.
That was
transition? Is that a transition?
That was a solid, slick this, transition right there.
I have
you're a professional broadcaster,
so,
John Gambadoro.
My son plays with a kid whose brother is going to Washington State right now. And his father was showing me like a picture of snow on the ground in Pullman. It was snow on the ground in Pullman this week. Snow on the ground, Pullman, Washington. Well, Washington, they're coming here. It's I know it's not 110. But this is a mid-afternoon game.
12:30 kickoff, yeah.
Right, this is an afternoon game. 90 degrees outside. It only gets hotter from like 12:30 to 4, right? It goes up a little bit.
It'll be warm.
Like, it's going to be warm.
It's going to be warm.
That should play in ASU's favor. I'm not saying it makes a big difference. You'd rather get them like when when it's 105, right?
Sure.
Like New York, but it's still warm enough. It's still going to be hot out at 90 degrees.
There's no question. There's no doubt that that could play a role in this.
This is a night game. It wouldn't matter, but it's a day game.
We talked the other day about ASU's offense. They're averaging like 24 points per game, right? And how very few division winners since it became the Pac-12 actually won their division averaging under 30 points per game.
Right.
You've got to score over 30 points in this game.
Here's how I think of it. If the game's in the 30s, I think Washington State probably wins. If the game's in the 20s, I think ASU wins.
I don't know if ASU can keep Washington State in the 20s.
If they could keep them to 24, 26, they might be able to. I think they could win the game.
Yeah,
you got to keep it. If Washington State gets in the 30s.
You're putting more of the onus on ASU's defense to contain. I feel like I'm putting more of the onus on ASU's offense to take advantage of how bad Wazoo's defense is. But I understand where I think this game is going to be in the 30s. I think it's going to
maybe they can win it like 31-28 or 32. But I think if Washington State scores 35, they're going to win the game. I don't know the ASU.
I just don't know
if they can.
Even against this defense, as bad as they are?
I like the quarterback. I do like him. He's young. But what did I say about Eno Benjamin the other day? He's not having a Eno Benjamin type year.
Yeah.
Right? His yards per carry are down by like 2 yards per carry compared to last year.
They are.
I mean, I like Brandon Ayuk. I like some of the weapons on this team. I do, but I don't know if they're scoring 35 in the game.
He can return to the Cardinals after this weekend. And everybody at the Tempe headquarters cannot wait for one Patrick Peterson to walk through those doors. We'll talk about that coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show.